Welcome to What the Health? Where anything health is fair game as we tackle the trends and bust the myths about health and wellness. Here are your hosts, Dr. Dan and Angela Toro.
And welcome to another episode of What the Health. I am Dr. Dan here with my co-host,
Angela. Welcome back, guys. Get it out of the way real quick. Our disclaimer, as you guys know, we are here for informational purposes only. We are talking about health, in no way offering individualized medical advice. Always talk to your trusted healthcare provider before making changes to your life or lifestyle. So with that being said, although I don't think there's really anything harmful that could be recommended coming from today's podcast,
but who knows anymore?
You know,
we always say something. Very good. So today we are talking about breathing, or I guess the more scientific term is respiration, which we're going to get into that about why there's two different types of respiration in the body. But when we think of breathing, what do we think about, Angela?
I mean, I think the nice thing is we don't have to think about it. So if we imagine if we had to go through our day thinking, being conscious of our breathing, but so luckily it is the way that we get air, oxygen into our body and expel carbon dioxide back out of our body. And but it's it's one of those completely natural processes that we always talk about our body, how it is designed to take care of itself and
automatically,
yes, without having to think about it. But what's really great about breathing, it's one of those things that will happen without us thinking about it, but we also can control it and we do have control over it. And practicing that control and that mindfulness when it comes to breathing can have a lot of really positive health benefits, both physically and mentally, emotionally, because of the way that it interacts with the
autonomic system.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
So anytime we say autonomic, you hear the word autonomic nervous system. We always talk a lot about it in terms of the stress response, fight or flight, which is the sympathetic fight or flight system, or the rest and digest. That's the relaxation. That's the parasympathetic nervous system. Those are the two branches of the autonomic nervous system. So anytime you hear the word autonomic, it means automatic. So it is part of your nervous system. That's actually what we're measuring in the office when we look at the infrared thermal technology and the scan over the spine. We're looking at temperature. Well, temperature is one of those automatic processes. Your body is self-regulating. So we're looking at that temperature change and deviation as a window into your nervous system and how it's adapting and functioning. So breathing is one of, you know, thousands of functions that the body automatically controls. But like you just said, it's very interesting. I don't know if I've ever actually thought of it like that, because you have no control over your blood pressure. You have no control over your heart rate, other than the fact that you can, you know, pump your muscles, that you can move your voluntary muscles and, you know, cause your blood pressure to go up through, you know, exercise. But that's interesting that you mentioned that, because it is, breathing is a process that you both have voluntary control and there is involuntary control over it. So that connection between, you know, how you could tap some of those physiological processes. Wow.
Look at that.
I always talk about, I had a professor, maybe I've mentioned this on a previous podcast. I have a professor in chiropractic school. He used to talk about MDLR, minimal daily learning requirements. So I've been asking my children when they come home from school, what was your MDLR today? I have my MDLR.
That point of controlling it, manipulating it, and working with your, and I keep using the word being mindful of it, really comes into play with, you know, when you're talking about that bridge between the sympathetic and the parasympathetic. Because so when we're in that state of stress, whether it's an actual physical stressor like exercise, or a mental emotional stressor like you're, you know, stressed, the kids are all screaming and running around, or work is, you're on a tight deadline and you don't feel like you're gonna be able to finish. All of those things are going to affect, you know, the things that we just talked about, heart rate, blood pressure, and breathing. So if you're, you know, if you're exercising, or if you're in that state of fight or flight that you need to be prepared to either fight for your life or run the heck out of there, your breathing's going to go up because you're going to need to be quickly getting that, pumping that oxygen in. But the problem is it's going to be a much shallower breathing. Again, it's going to be that really short-term type of breathing.
Yeah.
Versus when we're talking about the parasympathetic, the rest and digest time, that's where you really want that more deep, what we call belly breathing or a diaphragmatic breathing, where you're really inflating the entire lung. And yeah, exactly.
I'm just going to breathe in the background.
Yeah, that's not perfect. Perfect. Got some white noise going here. But it's great. So that's why, you know, whenever people are really stressed, you always hear people say, oh, just breathe. And you're like, yeah. Like it, and it sounds, you know, it sounds so simplistic, but it is really true because it is the one thing you can control in those times of heightened stress. And even during exercise, you know, the type of sport that I'm in, doing, you know, a kickboxing sport, we talk constantly about the importance of breathing and having to make sure that you're, you know, you're working your breath with the movements, because that's the biggest thing we'll see. People come in, you know, they might be athletic, they might have done other sports, they might work out, but they come in and they don't breathe correctly, and they feel like they're going to go down or they're going to throw up. And and it's really important to like have that connection between the breath and the movements of the body, both when you're doing something active and when you're trying to relax. And learning how and when to breathe the proper way can really have some, again, short-term and long-term impacts on your health.
Yeah. You bring up an interesting point there, you know, so you just talked about exercising and how, you know, if you're not breathing properly, you'll end up, you know, throwing up or even passing out. And, you know, it's very interesting that, yes, you do have some voluntary control over your breathing, but if you're not doing it right for a very short period of time, the body's going to find a way to kick you back into an involuntary breathing if we had voluntary control over many of the systems in our body, we wouldn't live very long.
Oh, yeah, that would be a lot to coordinate.
So thank God we have a wonderful nervous system to coordinate all of that for us. But yeah, that the idea of that, you know, again, the belly breathing, the deep breathing, you've got your diaphragm, so. You know, there's a lot of muscular control that works with, pulling in the oxygen from your environment into the lungs. And so the way that works is your thorax, basically your chest down to your the bottom of your ribs, is a vacuum. And so when you are taking a deep breath in, what happens is your diaphragm, if you think of it, it's like an umbrella. And when you're breathing in, it actually, think of that umbrella being flattened out. Okay, so your diaphragm, which runs like an umbrella from the outside of the ribs and the spine all the way up under the lungs, under the stomach, over the stomach, under the lungs and under the heart. Well, it pulls down towards your feet. And what that does is that creates that negative pressure in the chest. And so that negative pressure, since it's a lower pressure compared to the outside environment, pressure, as we learned in basic science class, you know, air always moves from high pressure to low pressure. If you don't know that, just take a balloon and pop it and you'll see where the air goes. So the air then, because of that negative pressure environment, inside the chest, because of your diaphragm pulling down, and again, your diaphragm is one big muscle. So again, neurologically controlled, and you both have involuntary and voluntary control over it. If I want to take a deep breath right now, I can force myself, I can, you know, voluntarily make that decision. But then as I'm talking, I'm not thinking about it. So it's under the involuntary control. So anyway, you can create that negative pressure. Air goes in and then it relaxes and then it just pushes back out. And, you know, again, there's when you're under that involuntary control, it's just at a very, low tone, a little bit in, a little bit out. So you actually look at the depth or the amount of air that goes into the lungs when you're not thinking about it. It's very shallow. But I'm actually not really, I forget what the numbers are. I'm sure I learned them at some point. But, you know, the actual percentage of, you know, what normal respiration is in terms of the actual percentage of how much volume of air your lungs can take in. It's actually, you know, probably a fairly small percentage of what you're breathing on a regular basis versus what a full deep breath of air that you can manage to take in terms of your lung capacity. So you've got your diaphragm, you've got your muscles between the ribs, and you think of like having ribs like a pork, you know, all that muscle meat that you would eat off of the ribs, that's what you have on your rib cage. They're called your intercostal muscles. Those also have to, contract and relax in order to help your breathing. But then you talked about, I'm going to go back to this then, is you talked about the short, shallow breathing mm-hmm. when you're in the stress response. And so many of those muscles, they're what are called like the secondary respiration muscles, because they don't kick in all the time. They are the auxiliary breathing muscles. They're the muscles that attach from the top of your scapula or your shoulder blade, and they attach from the top of the collarbone. So if you take your shoulder blade, if you feel that in the back of your arm and then your collarbone, there's a lot of little muscles there, and then they actually follow up the neck and up even into like the back of the head, even the base of the chin there. So there's a lot of those muscles that will start to contract whenever you're in a fight or flight response, because what happens is you're not using your diaphragm as much, especially if you start to fatigue or you're stressed. So what they'll do is they'll contract and they lift your shoulders up off of your thorax, up off of your rib cage. And by lifting the shoulders up off of the rib cage, you're able to take a little, you're able to breathe more quickly. Yeah, you're able to get air. It's more shallow breathing. You're only pulling it into the top part of the lungs, but you're able to do it at a very rapid rate. And so that's the challenge, though, is, doing that long term is not a healthy response, because you're only engaging the very top part of the lung tissue. Mm-hmm. You're activating those secondary respiration muscles, which are only meant to be activated during a short fight or flight response. We've talked about this in numerous times, right? Fight or flight response is a natural, normal, healthy response. The problem is we are chronically in it so often, so many times of our life. So our breathing is not designed to be held in that, in those auxiliary breathing muscles up around our the front and back of our neck. And so many people with neck pain and headaches, it's related to how they're breathing. It's like, because they don't know how to take a deep breath in. And then so what happens is so all those muscles get overactivated, and so you're pulling on all those muscles up the side of the neck, neck pain, headaches, shortness of breath. You don't feel like you can take a deep breath in. But then also the use it or lose it principle comes into play. So they're not taking a deep breath in. So we've had this, the patient we're talking about. We had this patient come in, and again, just a very anxious individual, woman in her golden years, definitely in her late 70s, and, just having all of this mid-back pain. Well, she wasn't activating any of the breathing, any of the deep belly breathing, and it was her mid-back pain was literally right in the middle of the spine where where the diaphragm attaches to the spine. The diaphragm attaches to T10, 11, and 12. That's like the anchor of that umbrella I just talked about. She wasn't activating it. And so there was no gentle pull, which again is a natural, healthy pull on the spine. So it's like it was literally just, getting weaker and weaker in there until the point of, she was having all of this pain because of all the, the secondary little postural muscles were probably having to activate in that area because her diaphragm wasn't pulling in air. So, so all of that's very important. Go ahead. Yeah. I'm going on.
No, sorry. I was going to say, but again, what's interesting, because breathing is a completely automatic process, it's not something we're taught how to do. And we've talked about this too, and we've talked about, exercise and engaging core muscles and things like that, where again, if you're not an athlete that hasn't trained and learned how to lift properly, it's not something that people just necessarily know how to do. And breathing's the same way. If you've never trained, how to breathe, you wouldn't necessarily know that there's a right or wrong way to do it, because you're just, going about your day-to-day life. And something that I really always work with people, I've worked with her with, and several people with, is, I always ask people, take a deep breath. And I'd say probably 99% of the time when people do, their shoulders go up. They're breathing into their chest. And so I say, now put a hand on your chest and a hand on your stomach. Now take a deep breath and only let the hand on your stomach move, not the hand on your chest. And all of a sudden, it's like that, oh, that's what it means to breathe. That's when I say belly breathing. That's what we're talking about, is expanding that diaphragm. And if you do that just a couple times, those real deep belly breaths, it's amazing. You can literally see people relaxing. I've had people be like, oh, wow, like I can feel my heart rate coming down. I can feel like I just feel more relaxed. And it really doesn't take much. You know, a couple breaths like that is really all it takes to really start shifting you from that sympathetic back to that parasympathetic. And again, because the parasympathetic nervous system, the rest and digest, is where digestion, reproduction, muscle recovery, all of these things happen. That's what it's really important to make sure that we're getting ourselves shifted back into that state. That's why I think about it. When you're chronically stressed, you tend to have stomach issues, whether it's constipation or the opposite, where it's kind of going constantly. So
yeah, heart problems, you get sick more often.
Yep. So working the goes on yeah, so just working the deep breathing on a regular basis can really help, you know, again, relax some of those other systems that start to shut down when we're in that chronic state of stress, and allow them to do what they need to do. Because a lot, you know, again, what do people do when they have those issues? They take a pill. But honestly, it's all your body's doing is what it's supposed to do. It's in a chronic state of stress, so it's shutting down all those other systems. So if you address the chronic stress, which breathing is probably one of the easiest ways to both, again, physically and mentally, emotionally, get yourself out of that state of heightened stress, it just allows that body to finally shift back into that rest and digest system. And again, less headaches, better digestion, better sleep. You know, doing that at night, I tell people, you know, put that on with some, you know, meditative music or whatever, white noise, and do your deep breathing. Oh my gosh, yeah, it makes a big difference. Like, do that instead of watching, you know, the latest horror documentary.
I'll do that.
Well, yeah, I mean. But yeah, it really, really plays an important role. And it's something, you know, if you've never really tried to do that, you know, take a second and put a hand on the stomach, put a hand on the chest, and just practice breathing so that only the hand on your stomach. And I'd say women especially struggle with this, because again, we spend our whole life trying to suck our stomach in. And the last thing we want to do is fully, you know, expand it. But, you know, again, when you really feel the difference, it's like, oh, that's what a deep breath feels like.
Well, and then, you know, you even go as far as to say as, you know, being overweight or obese. It's like you are literally, you know, especially for men, because
it's all that central obesity.
Yeah, you know, women tend to carry, you know, excess fat more around the hips. Men carry it more in their stomach, in their gut, you know, and they, and part of that is because of, you know, how the excessive fat around the organs is carried. So men won't, you know, get a lot of subcutaneous fat. Women will carry excess fat more as subcutaneous fat. We carry it more as visceral fat. That's why men have a higher incidence of cardiovascular disease and, you know, a lot of other, you know, chronic illness, because of how their bodies are designed to carry that excess fat, because we're really not designed to carry a lot of excess fat.
Or, yeah.
You know, that's a whole other episode talked about in terms of, you know, keeping your, you know, keeping a healthy, you know, body weight. But yeah, we carry that excess fat around our organs. Well, if you have, let's talk about the organs under the diaphragm. You've got your liver, which is, you know, second biggest organ in the body, next to your skin. You've got your stomach, you've got your, all of your intestines, you've got your spleen, you know, kidneys sit more in the back, but yeah, so if you start, you know, adding, you know, layers of excess fat to those organs, well, you take up more space in that, you know, in the digestive cavity, in your abdominal cavity. So you have your thoracic cavity, which is, you know, that's the long heart and lungs above the diaphragm.
Where the ribs are.
Yeah, well, you know, upper ribs, and then, you know, diaphragm, you know, sits right under heart and lungs. And then, you know, you have all those other organs I just mentioned, stomach, liver, you know, spleen, you know, all the digestive, the you know, large and small intestines. So if you start adding layers of fat to those organs as digestive, you know, and filter organs in the abdominal cavity, well, your diaphragm doesn't have as much room to pull down So it's harder to do the belly breathing. You know, that's the example of a larger individual bending over in the morning trying to tie their shoe. It's like, I have to hold my breath to tie my shoe because I can't breathe because, you know, my stomach is literally, my belly, my abdominal cavity is literally preventing my diaphragm from expanding because I'm bending over and, you know, putting so much pressure on it. So, all of that, your physical, postural position has a lot to do with breathing. And so much of that is why chiropractic, with your adjustments and, the spine has played such a role in breathing. I mean, mm-hmm. how often do you get adjusted?
And I'm like, oh, I can breathe again.
Oh my gosh, I can breathe.
Oh yeah, that's that mid back one I know, and yeah, I'm like, oh, can't breathe.
So it's so again,
not that I can't breathe, but I feel like I can't take a full deep breath.
You're activating, everything's expanding more. The ribs articulate, they join with that middle back spine called your thoracic spine, and so all those ribs articulate from the front with the breastbone, and then they go around the body to form the rib cage. And then they attach to the back part of the spine. And when that's not moving appropriately, then again, it literally is harder to expand because the ribs aren't moving up against the thoracic spine. And getting that adjustment, we always talk about the neurological connection with chiropractic care, but there's literally just a biomechanical movement, better movement of your spine where it's like, oh my goodness, like I can actually move my middle back and my ribs are expanding better and so I can take more air in. But there is also, from a neurological standpoint, a connection with chiropractic and making sure nerve supply to the diaphragm. Any colleagues listening to this or, medical or health professionals will love this one. We always study for boards and, you learn a bunch of little, sayings just to remind yourself of what different different things mean in different situations. And so C3, C4, C5, which are the nerve roots that exit out of the, the neck. C3, 4, 5 are, those are branches coming off the spinal cord. Well, those three nerves form what are called the phrenic nerve. The phrenic nerve comes off C3, 4, and 5 and innervate the diaphragm. So the saying was C3, 4, 5, keep the diaphragm alive. So again, it was just one of those quick board sayings. But so many times when I'm looking at someone's neck and they have a subluxation, a lock, misalignment, there's degeneration at 3, 4, 5, they can have issues with breathing. And a lot of times in young kids they'll develop asthma or activity induced asthma because you start to put their body under stress and it's like, oh shoot, I can't breathe as much. And that's exactly what happened to me whenever I developed asthma as a kid. When I went into chiropractic school later on in life, one of my primary subluxations was found at C3, and that was the start of that 3, 4, 5. And I will never forget when I started getting my spine adjusted, checked and adjusted on a regular basis, maybe on a weekly or every other week basis, my breathing improved significantly. So that has a major, major impact from a neurological standpoint. If you have any type of breathing challenge or even if you don't know, because again, that's a lot of times people come in and it's like, I didn't know I wasn't, I was locked up or restricted in my breathing. And it's like, wow, now I can take a deep breath in, or oh my goodness, my sinuses are now clear. because there's so much connection to the sinus around C1 and C2, the very top two segments in the spine. So much neurological and again, biomechanical connection. Our intern was, working on giving me an adjustment the other day, and I had a little bit of congestion, fall weather turned, it's cold outside, you got leaves coming out, and so I was having some of that congestion. Literally, as he was adjusting my C1 with the instrument, I could literally feel the thumping in my sinuses, and then afterwards it was like all just started completely draining out. I'm completely clear over the last 24 hours. So it's like, it is amazing how connected that all is, both neurologically and biomechanically. And when we keep that clear, we're going to breathe better. Mm-hmm. And the breathing is kind of important.
That's kind of important. But yeah, so ultimately it's just, it's a matter of, again, being aware of how, that's the first step. So do you even feel like, do you feel like you can take a deep breath? Do you know how to do deep breathing? And then again, practice with everything is practice. It's, you know, I was fortunate that I was in choir from an early age. And so that was a big part of what we worked on and practiced was breathing into the belly. And so, I mean, it's something that I've been practicing my whole life, but for a lot of people, again, it's like, especially if you're talking about people that are later in their years and have gone, 50, 60, 70 years of maybe never really taking a deep breath, yeah. It'll take practice to learn that. But once you really truly feel the difference, and you can, it's one of those things you can feel immediately the difference between a shallow breath and a true deep diaphragm breath. You'll start to notice a difference in mood, energy, digestion, headaches, all of those things that just come with the chronic stress will really start to be alleviated by making sure that you're getting that true deep breathing in.
So what's that one? Because you came across a book, several years ago. How did you come across that book?
And you recommended it. Actually.
Well, I think because I think a patient recommended it to me, actually. So, I think it was one of the sisters who came to see us.
No, I recommended it to her.
Oh, okay.
But it's...
How did I come across
it? I have no idea.
Oh, I forget.
yeah, it was one you had recommended but didn't even read, and then I read it. I'm like, you should actually read this book. But yeah, it's called Three Deep Breaths by Thomas Crum, and it's more for the stress reduction mindfulness side. So it's really told as a, it's kind of told as a story. You follow this guy through these, through his kind of day. Yeah. And he talks about, the author talks about then how to incorporate breathing and mindfulness, and each breath is a different, has a different intention with it. And it's a really easy read. I've recommended it to so many people because it does. I think it just helps with that, the mind-body connection. And there's still things that I think about, it's the one they talk about, the first breath is the centering breath. So just, again, bringing yourself back to being aware of where you are and using opportunities in this crazy hectic world where we would normally be a stressor.
Reactive, and
taking it as, so you're late for something and you hit that red light and immediately it's like, it's like, well, you can't do anything about the red light. You're at the red light. So instead,
don't do that.
The number of people that I see doing that anymore is terrifying.
Yeah.
But using that as an opportunity is, okay, I'm at this red light. So like, this is now just time that I have to sit and breathe and be present. So just that kind of, it talks more about how to incorporate the breathing throughout your day and how to shift your mindset of things that, could usually be stressors and instead turning them into those opportunities. It was just one of those books that it just was, I keep it in my car. I take it with me when I go hiking and I'll just, turn to, I have it so marked up with the pages and things underlined and pages folded over, and I'll just turn to a certain passage that I enjoyed and, refer back to it. But yeah, I would highly recommend it if it's, if you're somebody who's does feel very stressed and does feel like, you're just not even quite sure where to start. Maybe, meditation's not really for you, or you're just not even sure where to begin. It's a good, easy starting point just to realize how much control we really do have in a world where we feel like we don't sometimes. So, yeah.
Well, and again, it's probably, it's pulling out the, what you do have control, mm-hmm. and not stressing over what
exactly.
you have no control
yes, exactly.
over.
Focus on what you can control.
I can go through that red light. No, I'm just kidding. Again,
which is why we have the disclaimer at the beginning. After I said, what could we possibly recommend in this episode? That would be.
It was yellow.
Oh my gosh. It was pink.
Oh my goodness. I'm guilty.
But highly recommend that book. And I'm sure we could find some other, resources on more of the, scientific.
Yeah.
But yeah, for me, it's like, I find the mindfulness of it so powerful. And again, and if you're focusing on that, you're going to get all the physical benefits too, without really having to think about them. And that's where that's sort of how I work with people. That's how I live my life, is it's, you can always set out with, you know, these very specific goals. You know, I want to lose X amount of pounds. I want to lower my blood pressure. I want to, you know, blah, blah, blah. But at the end of the day, if you just, if you focus on your body and what your body needs, all those things are just going to come into play. So yeah, you could sit there and go, oh, okay, now I got to go practice my, my deep breathing so that I can get to, like, well, but again, if it just becomes part of your, you know, your mindfulness practice, part of your wellness practice, you're going to get all those other benefits without even having to think about it.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was going to discuss, because everything we just talked about in terms of respiration is actually considered secondary respiration.
Yeah, I know you wanted to touch on.
we're going to, just in essence of time, we'll do another podcast about primary respiration that has more to do with the literal central nervous system, the brain and spinal cord, and what the brain and spinal cord, which is bathed in, which is a very thin layer of fluid, a bath of fluid called your cerebrospinal fluid, cerebro being the brain, spinal being spinal cord. And really the, you know, the mechanics in all of that, and the very, you know, important value of making sure that spine and cranium, the actual bones have very minimal movement. They have, you know, very small, you know, micromillimeters of movement, but it is important in terms of, you know, the pumping mechanism of that cerebrospinal fluid. So that's actually what is considered primary respiration, and that works from the cranium all the way down the spine, all the way into the tailbone. And so that can be impacted if any one of those spinal segments or the tailbone is locked up, or, you know, you had an injury, or, you know, concussions, head injury, you know, how you sleep, how you breathe, you know, because that was another thing we didn't even get into. I had a dentist friend, you know, we recently had a conversation because she's actually getting into, you know, some other opportunities to help young children learn how to breathe properly, because we don't, you know, there's so many things that we have done in our, you know, culture and our lifestyle that, we've gotten away from, you know, actually learning how to breathe through our nose. And, you know, when you're breathing through your nose, that helps the development of the hard palate, mm-hmm. that helps the development of the sinuses, that helps the development of the jaw and the alignment of the teeth. You know, and so if you look at how, you know, we've kind of evolved over the last, you know, probably century or two, you know, we've become very narrow in our, you know, in our breathing cavity, our sinus cavities, narrow in our jaws. And so you have, you know, more incidences of needing impacted wisdom teeth that need to come out because there's just no room in there. And a lot of that is tracked back to how we're breathing as infants and young children. You know, so that's a whole nother thing that, you know, that we didn't even get into today in terms of like breathing through the nose versus mm-hmm. breathing through the mouth. But I think we went over some very, very good information about breathing and, you know, being mindful of it, the control, you know, versus involuntary, you know, automatic process that it is. And just making sure that if you really need to, you know, see if you or, you know, you have a son or a daughter, you know, a niece or a nephew who is having health challenges that could be related to breathing, and maybe you don't even know if it is, it's something that we may be able to identify and, you know, and help. So if anything sounded, you know, like it resonated with you, please, you know, we've got a lot more information on our website. We will certainly put links in the podcast here, depending on where you're looking at this, but do not hesitate to reach out to our website, Turo, T-U-R-O, familychiropractic.com. Always happy to send you any information or get in contact. You can reach out to us directly. But with that being said, I'm Dr. Dan.
I'm Angela. Thank you guys so much, and we will see you next time.
See you at the next one.
You've been listening to What the Health with Dr. Dan and Angela Turo, brought to you by Turo Family Chiropractic. To learn more about the resources mentioned on today's show or listen to past episodes, visit www.whatthehealth.world.